Welcome to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, where we uncover the success strategies and the secrets of the top 1% so you can elevate and transform your life today. I'm excited about my guest today on Making Bank. We've got to know each other a little bit off and on over the last several years, and I'm really excited to introduce you to Hal Elrod. His nickname, Yo Pal Hal. In addition to being one of the highest rated keynote speakers in America, Hal is the number one best-selling author of one of the highest rated books in the world with over 1,500 Amazon reviews, The Miracle Morning, as well as creator of the Miracle Morning book series. Hal is also in the Hall of Fame of Business Achiever, Ultra Marathon Runner, host of the top-rated Achieve Your Goals podcast, and creator of the Best Year Ever Blueprint live event, and a grateful husband and father of two. That's awesome, man. So when Hal, known as Yo Pal Hal, his mom gave him a mic to use while hosting his first radio show at the age of 15. But his greatest triumph came after the age of 20 when he was hit head-on by a drunk driver at over 70 miles an hour. Hal was found dead at the scene, and despite being dead for 6 minutes and in a coma for 6 days, breaking 11 bones and being told he may never walk again, Hal defied the logic of doctors and temptations to be a victim, and he bounced back to prove that all of us are capable of overcoming extraordinary adversity to create extraordinary results in our personal and professional lives. Hal has appeared on dozens of TV and radio shows across the country. He's been featured in numerous books, as well as Education of Millionaires, the all-time bestseller Chicken Soup for the Soul, Cutting Edge of Sales.
Yeah, you don't have to read all those.
No, books, that's
Josh.
Cool, man.
I'll let you. I know you're
I love great. To I just dive mom, in and know where
that
you
bio.
Are. No, that's cool. Well, Hal, welcome to Making Bank. I'm excited to have you on today.
Oh man, no, I appreciate it. I'm excited to be here. And Josh, I've watched your meteoric rise, so it's cool to you know, like you said, we've gotten to know each other over the years, and it's cool to be connecting in this space and with your audience.
For sure, man. And it was funny. I was just at the event we were at the other day. So someone was asking me, like, well, you know, where'd you meet Hal? And I said, well, we ended up meeting online, and then a couple of years ago, we ended up having dinner out in California when you were
LA Cafe
that.
Gratitude, my favorite
Gratitude
restaurant,
Cafe,
man.
Yeah. that was pretty awesome. So it was great to connect with you, and I'm excited to have you on today. So tell me a little bit about how did entrepreneurship start for you? Was it something that happened when you were a kid? Obviously, sounded like you got a mic and you were doing your own radio show and stuff when you were younger. But tell me a little bit about how entrepreneurship started for you.
Yeah, so it kind of started by accident, and I'm so grateful that it did. I'm actually enrolling my daughter, who is 6, in an entrepreneurial elementary school.
Cool.
Where the students design the curriculum. It's amazing. But anyway, so I really believe in entrepreneurship, and it was 15. Actually, I should say my parents bought a grocery store when I was 11. And then at 12 or 13, I started working at the grocery store. So that's when I learned that, you know, about making my own money. Like, my mom made me. My mom was pretty tough, man. She was like, hey, you know, I'll buy you Payless shoes. If you want those Nikes, you got to earn it, and you make your own money, buy them yourself. I was like, all right. So I learned that at a young age. And then at 15, a buddy of mine asked me if I wanted to DJ a school dance with him because his older brother got sick. So I was a sophomore DJing an 8th grade dance and had a blast. And after that, I went, dude, let's start a DJ business. That was so fun. And he and I actually broke up our friendship over a girl. That's another story. But I ended up, my dad believed in me, and I convinced him passionately to finance a bunch of DJ equipment. And he bought me like $1,500 worth of equipment, which, you know, I got big speakers and sure. strobe lights, fog machine. And I started I made flyers on a computer and posted them all over town. Got my first wedding for $100. And $100 for 4 hours of playing music to me was, oh my gosh.
Awesome, yeah.
So long story short, that really opened my eyes to two concepts. Number one, that you could get paid doing something that you loved. And number two, that you could be doing something that you were earning far greater. You know, my friends and at the grocery store, I earned $4.25 an hour, and I was making $25 an hour at my first gig, and very soon making $100 an hour, later that year.
Awesome. And so what was some of the key concepts that you found, you know, as you were building your business at a young age that's helped develop what you're doing today?
You know, I think that the most of the lessons came in my next venture, which was at 19, I gave up DJing on the radio to sell kitchen knives.
Okay.
Right? I actually, a buddy of mine sold Cutco cutlery, and he made a good, you know, put himself through college, no student loans, and I got interested. I decided to give it a try. And the first, yeah, I really wasn't that ambitious. I didn't know that I didn't think I would do well. I just wanted to make a little more money than the other jobs were paying me.
Right.
My first 10 days, I made $3,000 in commissions, you know, at 19. I mean, it was a ton of money for me. And
sure, yeah.
And then it just grew from there. And I went on to be break a bunch of records and be one of the top reps. And people would ask me, like, what's your secret to success? And I really believe that the two greatest lessons that I took from that anybody listening can learn from and that I leverage to this day, the two things I had that allowed me to break those records, it wasn't sales experience. I was new. I never sold anything in my life. I had never read a sales book in right. my life. I had the two things that we all have access to, enthusiasm and work ethic. I worked my butt off. I did 62 appointments in 10 days, and those are 90-minute appointments. So we're talking, I worked 9 hours a day plus drive time for those 10 days. And I was just super excited. I was just like this all the time. Like, these knives are amazing, Miss Jones. They'll cut your food. And and at the end of it, I talk so fast, I don't even think they know what I said.
Sure, I'll take it.
Their knives feel good, and this kid's excited. I'm excited. This is fun. Let's do it, right?
Yeah.
We overlook that sometimes when we're thinking about influencing people or, you know, being successful is just how important authenticity. And that's the other piece of the other side of enthusiasm. It was the authenticity and enthusiasm. I wasn't trying to, you know, fake it. I wasn't trying to get one over on the customer. I was like, hey, how much do you cook? And if it was a good fit, I got really excited about the value that that product could add to their lives. And, you know, to this day, that's a big key, I think, to everything else that I do.
For sure. No, and that is. And I mean, that's one of the things I think that I connect with you is just that enthusiasm that you put out. I think it's just on a daily basis.
Yeah. I mean, so, I think cultivating it, you know, a part of it's natural for sure, but part of it is cultivating it by, you know, the more you talk enthusiastically about something, the more you program your mind, body, and soul to feel that enthusiasm, and it becomes very genuine.
For sure. And then at 20, you had a life-changing event through the accident and everything. So kind of tell us what, you know, I guess after the accident or because you were in a coma for 6 days. What, I mean, so as you were kind of coming back from all this, how was your mindset? What did you use to, I guess, come out of the funk? Because I think you were in a funk for a little while, you had said.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the structure of your questions because I feel like we're just pulling like, you know, all right, instead of just telling stories, right? It's like, all right, give us the story, but give us the extract the lesson from it. And
sure.
And this was obviously, you know, being hit by a drunk driver, breaking 11 bones, dying for 6 minutes. Like I've been, you know, there's nothing I've ever been in that was so dramatic and you know, mentally and physically taxing as that accident was.
Right.
And when I came out of the coma, the doctor said I'd probably never walk again and I had permanent brain damage. My body was, you know, I broke 11 bones, so I was, you know, cut up and scarred, which obviously to this day. And I had to face my reality. And I think that, you know, whether it's like, you know, my car accident or losing a loved one, we all go through adversity in our lives and challenges that test us. It tests our will, it tests our strength, it tests our, you know, emotional fortitude. And I think the greatest lesson that I learned and what allowed me to get through that, in fact, so much so that the doctors thought I was in denial because I was so positive and happy. Like, I'm literally 20, I'm in a hospital bed, I'm, you know, my arm's in a sling, I got a metal rod in my arm, screws in my elbow, plates in my eye, you know, my ear is sewn back on, right? And I'm just like laughing and joking and happy. And the doctors are telling my parents, like, dude, your son has lost it. Like, he is delusional. He is checked out of reality. This is not normal for a 20-year-old young man to be smiling and laughing. Like, we need to find out how he's really feeling. They thought I was covering up my real emotion, like that I was really depressed and all this. And my parents came in and my dad talked to me. And, it, you know, it's a long story short. But I said, Dad, I live my life by the 5-minute rule, something I learned in my Cutco training, which is it's okay to be negative when things go wrong, but not for more than 5 minutes. And we literally learned to set your timer for 5 minutes. You could bitch, moan, and complain for 5 minutes, but after the 5-minute timer went off, you had to take a deep breath and you had to say, can't change it. And if I can't change it, I'm not going to feel bad about it anymore. I'm not going to dwell on it. I'm not going to complain about it. I'm not going to wallow in my sorrow. I'm going to accept it, be at peace with it, and focus 100% of my energy, emotion, attention, and action on what's in my control. And that's what I did. And that's why I said, well, I can't change that I was in a car accident, but I can be happy, grateful, and optimistic even in the midst of the most difficult circumstance in my life. And I apply that to everything from, you know, traffic rather than get right. upset. Can't change it, just be at peace with it and focus on what you can change.
Awesome, man. And I think that's a huge piece. I'd like to dive in a little bit more when we get back. Can you stick around for a minute?
You got it.
Awesome. Welcome back to Making Bank. Today we have Hal Elrod that we were speaking with, and Hal was just telling us a little bit about how he was utilizing his enthusiasm and his mindset that he was able to overcome the tragedy that he was in and applying the 5-minute rule that he talks about. You know, you can complain and moan and bitch for about 5 minutes, but then after that, it's done and you can't do anything else about it and time to move on. So, Hal, welcome back to Making Bank.
Hey, Josh. Thanks for having me, man. Let's keep going.
Sure. So you coma accident, done with that. Tell me a little bit about how you came up with the whole idea, the Miracle Morning and your book and everything.
Yeah, the mirror, you know, it's similar to the car accident where, like, I wrote a book after the car accident 6 years later, and okay. I had no intention of writing a book. It wasn't like a dream of mine. In fact, writing is one of the hardest things that I do. Of all things I do, it's like comes the least natural for me.
Right.
But a friend of mine said, Hal, you have a responsibility to share your story with the world in a way that helps people. And if I were you, he said, I would write a book. But, you know, and if you can't write a book, hire a ghostwriter, do whatever. So it took me 6 years because, again, writing's not natural for me. But 6 years later, I finally wrote the book, Taking Life Head On. And it wasn't, again, because of a dream of writing a book, but a sense of responsibility. And I think that we can all take that responsibility on, that whatever experience we have in our lives, you know, what if we all chose to go, hey, I have a responsibility to help other people overcome the challenges that I've overcome or achieve the things that I've achieved. And that's what most authors do, right? That's what they're doing. They're sharing their experience in a way that helps others. And that's what I did. And no intention of writing another book. It was like, all right, check it off the bucket list. You know, I'm not an author. I figured that out by writing a book. I'm not an author. And long story, not so long. I 2008, the U.S. economy crashed. And up until that point, I had just hit Hall of Fame with my company, as you had mentioned in the intro. And then I moved on. I wanted to be a full-time entrepreneur. You know, being a sales rep was like hybrid entrepreneur. I set my own schedule, made as much money as I wanted, but it wasn't my product or service. I wanted to create something that would add value to the world. So I started coaching, speaking. And then the economy crashed and I lost everything. I lost my house, lost over half my income, couldn't pay the mortgage, living on credit cards. I mean, and because I stopped the gym membership, I went from being in the best shape of my life. My body fat percentage tripled in 6 months.
Oh, wow.
Like, I went from being in the best shape of my life to the worst shape of my life. And my finances, I went from being debt free to having 52 grand on my credit card. I went from, you know, having just bought a house to losing the house. Right? It was really a low point in my life. And I got really depressed. And that same friend that encouraged me to write that first book, his name's John Berghoff. He's actually one of my business partners. He's my business partner now. We were talking and I go, John, help me, dude. I am like at my rock bottom. Like, I don't know what to do. And he said, Hal, go figure out, go to Google. Okay. Google will save you. I was like, what? And he said, just Google, find out what, he goes, spend an hour, find out what the world's most successful people do every day that you're not doing, do what they do. And it's only a matter of time before you start to see results like they get, you know? And I was like, I wanted like specific advice, like
right.
website and get visitors and traffic, right? And I was like, all right, whatever. So long story short was finding out that they woke up early. Like that's what I figured out. And I wasn't a morning person, Josh. So I kept coming across, I mean, you know, it's not like it's very now popular, like morning rituals, early rising.
Right.
And I'm going, no, I'm not a morning person. Like, and I just kept like, what else do they do? Like, what else do they do? I think I literally Googled what other than morning rituals, what do successful people do, right? And then of course, just more articles on morning rituals come up. And I'm like, damn it. So I finally was like, all right. You know, just like after one after the other, I was like, I got to wake up an hour earlier tomorrow. Like if I want my life to be different, I got to do something different. So then the question, I was like, all right, I'm committed. I wrote on my schedule, 5 a.m. I'm waking up. And then I go, well, what am I going to do? I want this to be the ultimate morning ritual. I want this to be the best of the best of the best. And so I kept searching, and I was writing down the most popular common practices that these successful people did. It was right. meditation, affirmations, visualization, exercise, reading, and journaling. And depending on which millionaire or billionaire you read about, they swore by one of those. Then the epiphany was, as I was trying to figure out which was the best one, I thought, what if I did all of these? What if I woke up tomorrow and I meditated for 10 minutes, then I read like some affirmation that from a CEO or whatever, then I did visual, and I did all of them. And I woke up the next morning, did all six practices, and I sucked at them. But that was the beginning of the Miracle Morning. It didn't have a name, but
right.
I felt like within 2 months, my income had doubled. I went from being in the worst shape of my life to committing to run a 52-mile ultra marathon I had never
That's
run
awesome.
Before. And because my life changed so fast, I started calling it my Miracle Morning. And that's kind of where I'll bring the story to an end. It wasn't going to be a book. It was just my Miracle Morning. And
sure.
then once I started telling it to a few people, they told it to, and it just, you know, it's now over 200,000 people around the world that have read the book. And, you know, most of them do the Miracle Morning every day. It's crazy.
And, you know, I think one of the things I've noticed, especially, you know, with, you know, reading the book, Miracle Morning, and then kind of now there's a lot of different spin-offs of it, because it was like you said, it wasn't all out there and what, you know, what people doing and having that morning routine. Now it's like, hey, you got to just have that. If you
yeah.
don't, you're just kind of one of those weird people.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you're behind the eight ball. Now
right.
It's, yeah. It's funny because the subtitle of my book, and it wasn't meant to be like the secret, but it's called the not so obvious secret guaranteed to transform your life before 8 a.m. Because I really found, like, at that time, you know, this was 8 years ago.
Right.
I'm like, this is the not so obvious secret, because this isn't like not everyone's doing the morning ritual thing yet, you know,
sure.
like it's just, and then, you know, Miracle Morning came out, and now it's very, you know, it's very widespread, and everyone's kind of like, if they're not doing it, they're like, oh, I know I need to do it. You
right.
know, so. Yeah.
Well, cool. And then now you have a whole series. I remember we were reading there.
If you watch the video, you can see some of them back
oh, yeah.
there. Yeah. So Miracle Morning for Writers just came out last month.
Oh, cool.
Miracle Morning for Parents and Families comes out in September. Miracle Morning for Entrepreneurs, I'm doing with Cameron Harold,
yeah.
former COO of 1-800-GOT-JUNK. That comes out in November, I think.
Awesome.
So the series books. And the series books, believe it or not, so the original book is rated, I think it's like 4.6 out of 5 stars. All of the series books are 4.9 out of 5 stars, which is very encouraging, because there's a lot of fear when you do a series.
Sure.
Like, how am I going to make these as good as the original?
Right.
And people are liking them better, which I don't know if that's good or bad, but I mean, I think it's more good than bad. So, yeah.
Awesome. So tell me a little bit about, you know, things are going good now. You have the Miracle Morning. So what's your business focus these days? What are you working on?
So it's pretty diversified. I when the economy crashed in 2008,
right.
My 95% of my income was from one-on-one coaching.
Sure.
That was it. And once I lost my income, and then I started, you know, got it back after the Miracle Morning, one of the realizations I had is, like, I can't be dependent on one stream of income. Like, and I think that's true. I wrote an article on Entrepreneur. If anybody wants to read it, go to entrepreneur.com and just search Hal Elrod.
Okay.
And it was on, I forgot the title. Oh, 7.1 steps to create multiple streams of income.
Oh, yeah.
But
the
opener, you've shared it on Twitter,
yeah.
dude. You're a fan. Go to Josh's Twitter. That's all you need. So, but the premise of it was, like, if you first of all, if you have a family, I feel like there's a responsibility to our family to, like, you can't be dependent on one stream of income in today's economy, whether that's a job or you're an entrepreneur, right? Like, you just don't know. The economy is changing. So, like,
right.
Blockbuster Video, right? Who would have thought they'd go out of business?
Yeah.
And there's so many companies like that. So because the economy is ever changing, I believe we owe it to ourselves and our future, our financial future, and our family to have multiple streams of income. So for me, I have the Miracle Morning book. That alone is a significant stream of income. I've got the entire book series, which each of those is a stream of income.
Sure.
And then I do keynote speaking, which is, you know, I do a couple gigs a month. I have a group coaching program called Best Year Ever Coaching, and that's got 400 members, and that's a lower price group program.
Sure.
I do one-on-one coaching. That's pretty minimal. I only have, I think, maybe four or five clients. I keep that to a minimum. And then we do live events. It's called Best Year Ever Blueprint. You can go to bestyeareverlive.com, and that's in San Diego in December once a year. And then at that event, we sell our, we offer a Quantum Leap Mastermind program. And that's a higher level, you know, high end in person, you know, 6 days a year with us plus calls and such. We launched that there and, yeah, I think that's it. So that's for the most part.
That's enough.
Yeah, but that's the business model. So then if all of a sudden book sales, you know, dry up for some reason, right. I'm not like, oh my gosh, what do I do? You know, or speaking. Like when the economy stopped last time, not only did my one-on-one coaching clients quit, but the speaking gigs dried up because companies were like, you know, they reined in their budgets. So speakers were in trouble, you know? Yep. So yeah.
No, that's awesome. So tell me a little bit about the live event, the blueprint. What's it all about? And then, you know, I'd like to know a little bit more about the mastermind and really what you guys dive into with that.
Yeah. And the first thing I would say, for just so I don't forget, I always tell people, if you go to the website, bestyeareverlive.com, and scroll down to the video, it's just right, you know, one fold underneath the first part of the site. Okay. Just scroll down just a little bit. I always tell people, watch the video, and, you know, I think it's 3 minutes long. You'll, by the end of it, you'll either go, oh my gosh, these are my people, I have to be there. Or you'll go, dude, these guys, people are nuts. Like, what a bunch of weirdos. I don't like that. You know, you'll know right away. So
you're either in or out.
Yeah, you're either in or out. Totally. It's very obvious. But here's the premise. And I really do believe that our event is different than 99% of events out there. And I know that only because I go to so many, and so do you probably, right? So many events. So either I'm speaking at entrepreneurial events or I'm attending, you know, masterminds and I go to some of the best events out there. Our event is experiential, where anything we teach you, you don't just take notes and then go home with 10 pages of notes. Most events, you go home with 10 pages of notes, right. And then it's like, oh my God, I'm overwhelmed.
Now what?
Ours, if we teach you to mastermind, you don't just take notes on it. We actually have you break into groups and actually do it real time while we guide you through it. Cool. Last year, we talked about random acts of kindness and how important it was to add value, even to strangers and especially our colleagues and loved ones, and how the more value you add, the more valuable you become in your company, in your niche, to your clients, to your friends, your family. So we talked about it. Then we had them break in and talk about different ways they could actually add value on a daily basis, very simple things.
Okay.
And then, talk about experiential. We said, all right, surprise, we're going to have a 3-hour break right now, and you're going to go with your group into the city of San Diego and videotape yourself doing what you just came up with that you could do on a daily basis. And people brought back homeless people with them onto the stage. They brought back children, and they brought back families, and they brought back people that ran nonprofits that they met on the street. I mean, it was amazing.
That's awesome.
So again, it is, here's the last thing I'll say on this is, when you go to events, usually there's a speaker on stage almost the entire time.
Sure.
Imagine an event where there's no one on stage 60 to 80% of the time because you're doing the things that the speaker just taught you to do, and you're not just taking notes. So that's what makes Best Year Ever Blueprint very, very different.
Cool. That's amazing. I mean, I think that gives you – you're put right into it, and it allows you to experience it as well as go out and – ingrain with what you're learning and take action on it. So
that's all my business partner. Like, by the way, he gets all the credit. Like I had the vision,
right.
But I didn't know how to execute it. He is a master of what you call experiential learning science.
Okay.
And so he actually like understands at a very deep level how human beings learn and retain at the deepest level. Right. And it is through experience. It's like if you tell someone something, they're like, they understand it. If you have them repeat it back, maybe they get it, you know, but if you have them do it and experience it and feel it, then it's like, oh, this isn't just something I took notes on. This is actually what it feels like to do it. And yeah, so.
No, that's awesome. And so tell me a little bit, I know you're real big, you know, with family and you have two kids and, you know, how do you... I don't really see it as a whole work-life balance. It's more, I think it as integration.
Sure.
You know, how do you tie all that together, you know, with traveling all the time and speaking and then also, you know, being present there with your family and everything?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, it's always a challenge. For me, I've cut way back on travel because of that. You know, it's like for a long time it was, you know, saying, oh man, I need to spend more time at home. But you get so programmed, especially when you're coming up, like right. Anytime you get an offer for that pays you money, you're taking it, you know, right? So, you know, and then once you get to a point where I was on a flight to speak in the Philippines, and a woman, Subi Zimmerman, the Instagram gal, she, we were talking about it, and like we were on a flight for, you know, 12 hours or something, so we got to talk a lot. And she basically, you know, came to realize, she's like, so, you know, why are you speaking and on the road? And kind of we realized, like, I don't need to. Like, sure. It's my favorite thing to do of all my work, but it's keeping away from the family. So I increased my speaking fee significantly, you know, basically doubled the speaking fee.
Awesome. Which,
and then I cut back the amount of gigs I was getting. So it's like almost earning just about the same amount of income.
Right.
For half the travel, right, away from family. And then I started bringing my family. So I'm doing a five speaking gig tour in October, and I'm bringing them. We're flying. They're going with me. We're going to be
– cool.
They're flying with me, and then we're staying in hotels. We're driving from city to city, you know. and I brought them to a few gigs. So, yeah, so I'm speaking less, bringing them with me when I can. And then I work from home. So, you know, I make sure I take time with them every day. We, you know, I get off at 5. I'm really big on not working into the evening and being with my kids from 5 until I put them to bed at 8, you know?
No, that's really cool. Cause I think, you know, as entrepreneurs, we're so busy and we have so much going on. Like you said, you know, being able to double your speaking fees and still keep your income and everything, so you can really retain that, and taking them on the travel, the trips and everything as well, I think is good. Especially, you know, I know my kids are younger, and as I said, they're about the same age as yours. And so,
yeah,
you know, it's that's that time that they remember and really want to
totally.
Have that time to connect.
Can't get that time back.
No, yeah. For sure. So tell me, we're got to wrap up in a couple minutes. What's one device that you can't live without that just makes it so you can really make things happen?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the iPhone, but I think you probably want more specific than that.
I mean, if you got an app or anything even too.
Yeah, so actually, dude, you know what's funny? It's Franklin Covey Planner. There you go.
Nice.
Dude, I'm old school. I've tried to switch to digital, and I have a hybrid. I still use like an online scheduler, I write it, you know, so somebody schedules an appointment with me automatically, but then I write it in my Franklin Covey Planner.
That's awesome.
So yeah, man, so there you go, dude. I am old school, and I've tried to switch, you know, every year. I'm like, this is the year, but there's something about being able to look over here and see my entire week at all times. You know, it's not a window that can be minimized or go behind or whatever. Like I'm an out of sight, out of mind person. I'd probably miss appointments all the time. But for me, it's like I can see the whole week at a glance. So, dude, there. I don't know if you've gotten that before, but I'm going Franklin Covey Planner, man.
Well, I've gotten like notepad and paper.
Okay,
I've gotten,
all right.
You know, kind of a variation. But I remember the Franklin Covey Planner when I was 13 years old and writing all my Tony Robbins stuff from the book down in there. And
I just finally stopped resisting it, and I'm like, there's something about it. I'm gonna stick. It, you know,
cool. And then, what's one or two action steps you'd want to leave our listeners with, just they can go out and start doing today that will help transform somewhere they are in their life?
Yeah, I mean, so it's, you know, for me, obviously, I'm biased in that the Miracle Morning is become the one thing that it not only changed my life, but I've seen it change more lives than I ever really imagined that it would or could. So I always tell people, like, don't wait till you've read the book to start doing the Miracle Morning. Don't wait till you've mastered all the practices or whatever. Here's the real simple premise of the Miracle Morning. There's two parts to it. Number one is to wake up when you want to, not when you have to. And you might go, well, I want to wake up at the last possible minute. No. The point is that if you hit the snooze button in the morning and you wait till the last minute to wake up, you're literally starting your day with procrastination, right? You're hitting the snooze button, you're sitting procrastinating. And there's a message, whether it's conscious or unconscious, to your subconscious that says, I don't have the discipline to get out of bed in the morning when I intended to, let alone do everything else that I want. But the opposite effect is even more powerful, which is you go, oh man, I want to stay in bed, but I'm going to move the alarm clock across the room, which is the biggest trick, by the way. Don't keep it by your bedside, because if you can reach it while you're half asleep, you're going to snooze every time.
Yeah.
If you got to walk out of bed and it's on the bathroom counter where you're going to brush your teeth and you commit to do that, it's a lot easier to get out of bed. So set your alarm clock back 30 minutes, do that for 30 days, and spend those 30 minutes doing some form of personal development. I recommend reading and exercise if you had to simplify, like 15 minutes reading, 15 minutes of exercise to start every day. That way you're stimulating yourself physically, getting blood and oxygen to your brain. You'll think clearer, have more willpower, more discipline, more energy, and you're stimulating your intellect so that you can apply strategies to improve your life and business while you're in a peak physical, mental, and emotional state.
Awesome, Hal. Guys, make sure you guys have been taking notes. If not, rewind, go back, grab Hal's book, Miracle Morning. I mean, I read it myself. It gave me tons of other additional insights and things that add to my morning routine and everything that I do on a daily basis. So I really appreciate you coming on today, Hal.
Yeah, man. It's an honor and a pleasure, Josh. Thank you so much for having me and all your listeners. I really appreciate it.
For sure. Let us know where we can find more about you, follow you at. Where's the best places to get a hold of you?
Yeah, miraclemorning.com is probably the best hub, you know. Okay. So miraclemorning.com is all things Miracle Morning related. HalElrod.com is all things, you know, speaking, coaching, et cetera. And then the book, you know, Amazon for the book for Miracle Morning, or iBooks. If you're an iBooks user, you can find it there as well.
Cool. All right. Again, awesome. And I look forward to seeing you again here soon.
You too. Thanks, everybody. Take care, Josh.
I am Josh Felber. You've been watching Making Bank. Get out and be extraordinary.